And we're back to the morning show on Wednesday, January 3rd, 2018, a brand new day. And another day that will never come again, so go out there and enjoy it enormously. And today we're very fortunate. We have David Voorhees as our guest. He's the director of the Jacob Leisler Institute for the Study of Early New York History, and it's located right here in the city of Hudson. Welcome, David.
Good morning, Matt. It's good to be here with you.
It's good to be here. Yes, it's good to be seen.
Good to be here in this cold weather, that's
I know.
For sure.
Oh, gosh. Yes, it's almost Minnesota cold.
Yes, it is.
Yes. So, Jacob, tell me a little bit about the Jacob Leisler Institute.
Okay. The Leisler began basically as my doctoral thesis, which was on what is known as Leisler's Rebellion, which took place in 1689 in New York. And it became a centerpiece of New York politics in the 17th and 18th century. It colored New York politics for at least a generation into Leislerian and anti-Leislerian camps. It was a result of what is known as the Glorious Revolution in New York, the Glorious Revolution in England, when William, the Prince of Orange, and Mary replaced the Roman Catholic King James II on the throne of England. And there were uprisings throughout the American colonies. And Leisler's Rebellion is the one that took place in New York. Jacob Leisler was a wealthy merchant. He was a militia captain, and he took over the control of the government for 2 years. When the new royal governor came in, his enemies had him executed for treason by hanging till half dead and then being beheaded. 4 years later, Parliament exonerated him. And
not a lot of good when you're dead.
No, it was not. But it was good for his family because the properties had been attainted and they were returned.
So he was a Catholic?
No.
No.
Leisler was a Protestant.
Okay.
Most of New York was Protestant at the time, of the Reformed faith. And they were thus very pro-William. But there was a lot more that is involved, because James II was reconfiguring the American colonies. He had subsumed New York into what is known as the Dominion of New England, where he placed all the northern colonies together into one large colony, and was creating a central administration to oversee them from Boston. And there was a lot of resistance to this.
Something I never knew about.
So there were a lot of issues involved. You're seeing a period when people are beginning to get a self-identity as being, I wouldn't say Americans, but as being New Yorkers, being New Englanders.
Mm-hmm.
They were developing their own traditions and customs. And the creation of this larger identity created a lot of problems. There was the issue of taxation without representation, even though it was minor. There was a lot of resentment going on. In addition, we still were in the period of the Reformation, and James was appointing Roman Catholics to higher offices in the area. So there was a lot of resistance to the Roman Catholics coming in.
Okay. I find this fascinating, particularly because there is so much history everywhere, and none of this was something that I had ever heard about in any of my, and it just amazes me.
It actually colors what is going on right up to today. I mean, you're dealing with a period when the manors are being established, which, of course, around here had great impact. The Livingston Manor, the Van Rensselaer Manor, Lower Manor. You're having a lot of movement of people into the region. And the development of a new society, in a way.
And the Dutch are fading, the English are rising.
I wouldn't say the Dutch are fading. There's a synthesis going on. So you're creating something different. You have to remember you have a lot of Germans coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Palatines coming in. You have a lot of French coming in. The Huguenots are coming in and settling. Of course, the natives play a very prominent role. You have a lot of Africans coming in who are also enriching this culture. So there's a lot of enrichment and synthesis mm-hmm. going on that continues to be reflected today.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I it's very rich.
It is indeed a very rich period, and that's one of the reasons why I felt that it's important that the records be preserved. The understanding of it is very important, and that is why I have created the Institute, and I thought Hudson is the perfect place to hold the Institute because of the rich history around Hudson.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
totally rich history. It's amazing.
One of the more fascinating things is what's known as the Claverack Giant, which is in 1705 there was a washout along the shore of the river right here in Hudson, and exposed bones. We now know there were mastodon bones, but at the time they were thought to be bones of the Noahic giants that had lived before the flood, the biblical flood. It generated a lot of interest and excitement all over, including in Europe. Eventually, the bones were sent to Europe to be studied, and it's often considered the origin of modern paleontology, and few people know that right here in Hudson is where it all began.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So
I'm sure that you are the repository of many interesting facts like that.
There are many stories that go on about New York that I think the people have either forgotten or they vaguely know. For example, the Zenger trial on the freedom of press.
Which trial was that?
Johann Peter Zenger, which was
yes.
the origins of freedom of press.
I taught about that in my media class.
Okay, so you know something about it.
I know something about it, yes.
But it's a very important event that happened right here. Well, it happened in New York City, but it's something that New York contributed to the development of our culture today. I think a lot of people do not realize that the creation of the United States had a long precedence. It didn't just happen out of thin air. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of processes going on, a lot of ideas coming in. And New York was a very rich area because there were so many cultures here that were acting and interacting together, creating the development of these new ideas. So I think that it's important to preserve that memory.
Yeah.
So this is not just about the Dutch, though the Dutch were a very important contributor to the process, but it's also about the natives who were also the local Indian tribes who were very important, the Africans who were coming in and what they contributed to the culture. It's about all the groups
mm-hmm.
together and how they synthesized.
You have a PhD in history from New York University?
That's correct.
Right. What drew you to history?
I would say it was probably my father. My father would take us to Colonial Williamsburg maybe once or twice a year. He always felt it was the perfect place to take a vacation because it was a safe place to allow me to run about. It mm-hmm. was educational. And at the same time, he and my mother could enjoy some romantic time together.
Mm-hmm.
So we spent a lot of time in.
That's great. I love Colonial Williamsburg. I've been there a couple of times.
It's a wonderful place to visit.
Yeah, it is. So how did you make the decision to form the Leisler Institute?
It came out of several processes. One is that I had been collecting so much material over the years that I've been working on actually Jacob Leisler himself. And I realized that his family connections, his children, and his grandchildren continued to shape the development of the colonial province of New York during the 18th century, and that their story was not being told, and that actually the whole story of the colonial development of New York was being neglected. Mm-hmm. The New Netherland Institute in Albany is doing a terrific job on the Dutch and on the period of New Netherland. But the subsequent period it has been basically neglected altogether. So I thought that it was something that we should be teaching people.
Yes, absolutely, because there's so much here that we don't know about, whether it's the bones or whatever. There is so much that's right in this little area that has shaped not just New York State, but the country and the way the country has shaped and formed itself.
What particularly has been concerning me is the misinformation and the lack of knowledge and how it's playing out in our political world today. And I think it's so important that people know how a lot of our ideas developed, because they're misunderstood. They're very easily misunderstood if you do not know the background to them. Mm-hmm. So this is something that I have been trying to promote. Another thing that has concerned me, and I've been partnering with SUNY New Paltz, is the inability of a lot of younger people to read cursive writing. And so a lot of knowledge about script from this earlier period is being lost.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's very important that we teach a younger generation and bring a younger generation in and give them the enthusiasm to understanding that they have this very, very rich history. And it's an exciting period.
Mm-hmm.
It's there is so much we don't know, and there's so much that could be still learned about it. And so that's one of my intentions, is to encourage people.
Yeah, I'm still gobsmacked by the fact that cursive writing isn't taught.
It's rather shocking. As you know, we grew up in an age when you had to write handwritten notes, thank people, and cell phones and the electronic media, all the electronic technology has changed all of that. And I'm not sure that's necessarily a healthy thing.
Well, even in turn, we could go on about this forever, because having been a high school English teacher for a little while, it was just, even then it was shocking to me, some of the skills that weren't being taught in the grade schools, that then you had to go back and do remedial grammar to ninth graders.
When you when you look back in the past and when you see what children had to learn and what they do not know today is rather frightening. Children had to learn the classics. Certainly when you're dealing with the colonial period, with the 17th and 18th century, they had an in-depth knowledge of the classical world, and often referred back to it for their ideas. And I think it's important to have this kind of background so you understand the development of the world today, of our world of ideas today. Because we're not just developing things from scratch. They have a long developmental history.
Yeah, they do. And I think it's wonderful what you're doing with the Institute to keep alive and to aggregate those documents and curate them, and because there will be people who will want to know these things in the future.
Well, I certainly hope so. I hope that's not forgotten.
And yeah.
There's also the visual aspect. I mean, there's the development of architecture in the Hudson Valley, which is very important to know. There's a whole art scene that goes on. I mean, there were precursors to the Hudson River School. There were the Limners, the great portraitists that came through the area. There's so many different ways to look at this. And, of course, everyone is interested in genealogy and interested in their family genealogies. And at the Institute, we have a large genealogical collection relating to the 18th century. But we have a lot of materials relating to families that were living in this area and all along the Hudson River. So,
Now, if people want to find out more about the Institute, do you have a website that they can go to and take a look at?
I do. It's info@jacobleislerinstitute.org.
That's the email address.
That's both the email and it's a www for the website.
Good. Thank you. Great.
So people can find me at that.
All right. And more about the – and you brought in an interesting and rather beautiful magazine. I can't even – I don't dare pronounce the name of it.
That is the De Havemann. I have produced it for the Holland Society for about 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
It deals with the Dutch colonial period, which, of course, is the earlier period. And it primarily focuses on the Dutch colonial period and the contribution of the 17th century Dutch to American culture.
Very interesting and really beautiful.
Thank you.
What's the Holland Society?
The Holland Society was founded in 1885 as a hereditary organization in the direct mail line. Recently, we've opened up to allow women to be members, also in the direct mail line. So your father must be of direct descent.
Mm-hmm.
And it originally was formed to collect information relating to the Dutch settlers, to form a library and an archives relating to the Dutch settlement of New Netherland, which is New York, New Jersey, Delaware,
mm-hmm.
This whole region. We began the New Netherland, the New Netherland Project under Charles Garing, which is now expanded to New Netherland Institute, which is doing an incredibly fantastic job of spreading the word about the Dutch in the early Dutch period.
Mm-hmm.
They've been translating the volumes of Dutch documents up in the Albany archives for years, and have much more work to do. So they're a wonderful, wonderful organization.
You know what? Now that I have you here, just so I can ask you some questions. What are some of the other interesting facts about this area, Columbia County, Greene County, that like the bones that got shipped off to Europe?
Well, I think that the development of the manors is one, particularly Livingston Manor, which is just south, and of course, Livingston, the town of Livingston, mm-hmm. the whole area. I find it fascinating that the lime on Beecraft Mountain, long before the development of the cement plants, was being burned and was being mined and burned. So there's a long history there that goes back into the 17th century.
Mm-hmm.
The farms in Claverack, along the Claverack Creek, they go back 1660s. There's a very rich history around here. And then the Native Americans. There were Native American tribes all around here that we need to know much more about.
Yeah, I live right on the Claver Creek.
So it's a beautiful area. And if you travel along it, if you travel throughout the area, you'll see a lot of, they're 18th century, but they're early 18th century Dutch-style houses. So
mm-hmm.
there's a very rich history here of that.
Yeah, I have friends in Stuyvesant, and the basement of their house dates from the 1680s, I believe.
Cool.
Yeah, it is. There was a big brick oven down there, and they've been restoring around it and making it. So you're restoring a house here in Hudson, too.
I am. It's actually a Nantucket-style house. It dates from about 1797. It was one of the proprietor families. It's from the exterior, it looks like a classic Nantucket house. When we stripped it back and we took it all the way down to the basic structure, you could see they must have used local Dutch craftsmen because there were certain aspects to the house in the building that are only found with the Hudson Valley Dutch. So. Mm-hmm. It's a mixture of
a synthesis.
Right, it's a synthesis.
Now, Okay, so you brought up something that I'm always curious about, and I've tried to do a little research on it, sort of half-heartedly. Who were the proprietors?
The proprietors were the family, or a group of Nantucket merchants. Right after the Revolutionary War, the English were raiding American shipping, particularly Nantucket shipping, and they were looking for a safe haven for their ships. And they had explored several options, and they came here to the what was then Clavering Landing. They noticed that there were two shallow inlets on either side, the two bays, North and South Bay, which are now basically filled in. And they felt that this would be a good safe haven for their whaling ships, protecting them from these English raids. So they bought up the land around here. There was a community already here. They mm-hmm. bought up from the families that were living here, the Van Hoosens, Hartwicks, whatever, mm-hmm. And created the city of Hudson. So I did not go that far. There's a very, very rich here history in this whole region.
I know.
And what I focus on is the earlier period, which is the period of Clavering Landing before the arrival of the proprietors.
I have learned a tremendous amount today from you. And I'd like to ask you if I can have you come back a couple of times just to talk about, we'll talk about some places and special parts of history, because the Leisler, I think I'm saying that right, Leisler?
Leisler, that's correct.
All right. Rebellion sounds fascinating to me. I knew nothing about that. And by the way, this is Matthew Tombers. This is the morning show on WGXC 90.7 FM, WGXC.org. Listen/listen. And we're talking to David Voorhees, and I'm Matthew Tombers. Wednesday morning show. But that's fascinating. That whole idea that there was a rebellion, I had no idea about that.
It was a very serious rebellion, in that it was taking over the government. Actually, it was taking over the government on behalf of William, Prince of Orange, William III, and holding it until what they felt was a legitimate government coming in. So it became a very violent rebellion. What makes it even more interesting is that it basically was a clash between Leisler and his in-laws, who formed the aristocracy, quote, of the period. And so as family feuds always develop, and this one has a long history before the rebellion, it got quite nasty.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, as we know, he came to a not very good end.
That is correct. But meanwhile, he had also imprisoned a lot of his relatives, so there was animosity on both sides.
I'm sure. Revolutions usually do that.
And you're dealing with a period where there is a lot of changes in ideology going on, because religion had formed the basis of many people's beliefs during this period. Mm-hmm. And new scientific discoveries were also challenging those beliefs. And so it created a lot of societal turmoil at the same time.
Well, and there was also the great struggle between Catholicism and Protestantism that was all over Europe during that century.
And this was part of that, because mm-hmm. you had the French, the Catholic French in Quebec, and there was fear, of course, that they would come down and they would conquer the region for Louis XIV.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things going on.
Yes. And that, it's just all fascinating. David, I always ask people that I'm interviewing this question, which is, excuse me, what is it that I should have asked you that I'm not smart enough to have asked you?
I'm not sure about that. I think this is a question you should have prepared me for. I think you've covered everything pretty well in your questions.
Good.
I think one of the interesting things, of course, is language and the issue of language. When you're dealing with language in this period, most people spoke a multitude of languages.
Mm-hmm.
Leisler himself was born in Germany, but raised in a French-speaking household. He was literate in Dutch and in English, so we know at least four languages, and he probably had some background in Latin.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. And that was, among educated people of that age, that was not uncommon.
No. Well, you had to be, particularly if you were a merchant, because you were traveling among different to different ports and dealing with different nationalities or linguistic groups.
Yes. Well, David, thank you so much for coming and joining. I would like to get you back again.
I'd be delighted to come.
And we'll find some period of this regional history that we can dissect a little bit on air and help hopefully educate people a little bit about what's been happening here in that period of time in which you're specializing.
In that period, yes.
Yes.
And many people working in other periods, and I don't ever want to speak on their behalf.
Yeah, but in that little period, I'm sure there's more interesting things that we can talk about.
There is.
There is.